Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast, and it is a spooky Halloween special. That's a fucking monkey. It's me, David Reed, and I'm joined by Marek Larwood, as ever, and Buddy the dog, who was scared or excited by the spooky monkey. I'm not sure. And also, as it's a special, and it's her favourite genre, Danielle Ward is back with us.
Hey!
Hello, Danielle.
Hello.
Hello, Danielle.
I used to be on this podcast.
You did. In fact, most people who write letters still hope or wish you were on it, because they always write to you as well.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, the fact that it is recorded in my own flat and I still can't be asked to be on it.
I mean, it does say a lot.
A lot.
It does say a lot.
No, it's really good.
Can't be asked.
Yeah.
Can't be asked to walk downstairs.
No, I love it. It's because I never get a chance to go to the cinema. I felt like I was letting the site down by... I never go to the cinema anymore.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's okay, mate. It's okay. It's Halloween soon.
But it's more than just Halloween, this episode.
Why is that?
Well, I've got a letter.
I thought you had an announcement.
I thought you were having an aneurysm.
It's sort of that. I mean, can you read it out, please, David, because you're better at reading than me.
Sure thing. This is... It's only from Chris Webb.
Chris Webb.
Voted in, and the vote counts.
Yeah.
Like the American election.
Okay.
As the official number one Film Fandango superfan.
Aww.
Chris says... Dear David, Marek and Buddy, if my calculations are correct, episode 260 will be Film Fandango's fifth birthday. As one of the many who've been with you since that very first episode with guest Izzy Sutty talking about crimes and misdemeanors, I'd like to remember that day.
I do remember that day. I remember Izzy Sutty.
Do you remember Izzy Sutty?
What happened to Izzy Sutty?
Oh, God, she
fell down a well.
A career well. You know, she's doing very well. I mean, we're being ironic,
literally,
aren't we?
Very well. She fell down a very well.
She fell down a very... very well. I'd like to wish everyone who's taken part a very happy half decade. As well as enjoying your movie chat while undertaking mundane household tasks, I'd like to listen while cleaning out my fish tank. I've also managed to expand my Facebook friends list with the other like-minded fans from around the world. Martin Appleyard hasn't replied to my Facebook friend request yet.
I feel sorry for Martin Appleyard, because I think he was a good fan. He's not written in again since. Please come back, Martin Appleyard.
Please come back. Chris continues. So thanks for all of that. I'm already looking forward to next year's superfan battle to see if I can retain my status. Might I suggest a quiz Fandango format based on all things Film Fandango? Christ, you guys will know way more than we do. Stuff that only a fan who'd religiously ploughed their way through 150 hours of podcast would know. Speaking of which, if there's anyone else out there who actually listens to episodes more than once, I'd love to hear what your favourites are. From the pre-Marek era, I always go back to episode 28, where David and the Penny Dreadfuls talk about the Wrath of the Titans. And number 33, Dark Shadows with Helen George.
Fuck Dark Shadows!
Yeah.
Fuck it!
Oh, it's terrible. Is an early favourite too. In the Marek period, number 61, Life of Pi, Gremlins and Dan Lowe. And Jizz, apparently. I do not recall.
Don't remember that.
And 72, Maniac, Welcome to the Punch, and the Holy Trinity of David, Danielle and Marek. They always do it for me. Obviously, the later 180-plus episodes are pretty good, too. So come on, Fandanglers, what's your favourite episode? Anyway, I thought I'd better try and tie this mail to an actual topic. Henry King recently asked about films that caught you off guard. A while ago, the in-laws sent my daughter the DVD of 2011's Tom and Jerry and the Wizard of Oz. As she was only 5 at the time, I couldn't explain to her the golden rule that any Tom and Jerry later than mid-60s is absolute bollocks. So I sat down to watch, expecting a low-budget, low-quality mess. Big surprise. Not only had they reverted back to the classic Tom and Jerry animation style and the violence of the Hanna-Barbera period, it's also a very faithful retelling of the 1939 Wizard of Oz, with Tom and Jerry along for the ride. It's practically a remake, but with added scenes that fill in some of the gaps from the Oz movie, such as why Dorothy doesn't get covered in mud when she falls in the pigsty, or where she gets the bucket of water from at the end.
They're both very important bits of...
They have dogged film academics for decades. They even animate Toto's wonky paw during Over the Rainbow. It's not a perfect film, but I thought the respect and attention it paid to the original was extraordinary. If you're a Wizard of Oz completist, it's an interesting addition to The Wiz and Return to Oz. And The Muppets Wizard of Oz.
Muppets Wizard of Oz is brilliant.
Here's hoping you'll all be around to keep watching the films for another 5 years. Chris. P.S. The birthday card's in the post. And it is. Chris has sent us a lovely birthday card all the way from New Zealand, including some chocolate pineapple things, which we're uncertain about, and some dog chocolates. So thank you very much, Chris Webb.
Chris Webb. Before we move on, can I just say that I am intrigued to see how racist this Tom and Jerry is? Because when we go, oh, back to the 1960s Tom and Jerry, what you really mean is the racist
was
Tom
it
and Jerry.
Was it racist?
Yeah!
I don't remember.
The black cleaner.
I was a black cleaner.
Very.
Am I misremembering? Because I always thought the humans were just legs.
But
there was a voice, was there?
Yeah,
right. There was a voice.
Really horrible portrayal of.
Okay.
That's why it's not on TV anymore.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of things aren't on TV anymore. Top of the Pops 2.
Yeah. What was that thing with Esther Hanson?
That's life.
Yeah.
What, because of the hideous racism?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Rude veg. But anyway, but thanks for these chocolate pineapples are.
I quite like
them. One. Do you like it?
What are they called?
No.
Lumps.
Pineapple lumps. I mean, it's a terrible name for it. It sounds like something taken out of a hospital ward, isn't it?
Chris Webb's been so nice, and I want to say how much I like them, but when I bit into it, it tasted a bit like biting into sick.
Well, they're not great, but they're...
I won't get my knife quick.
Marek loves them. Yes. Oh, God, 5 years seems like a long time ago. We can't have been doing it every week for 5 years.
5 years ago, no Brexit.
There was no Brexit, was there?
No third runway.
I had a career.
Marek had a career. I didn't. So.
Yeah. You were too busy to do this. Do you remember 5 years ago?
David Bowie was still alive. Yeah. Prince was still alive.
Just look what we've done to the world by existing. Well, anyway, let's get on to spooky wooky things.
Yeah.
Spooky wooky Halloween
spooky,
times.
Spooky Halloween.
What films have we been watching in the run up to Halloween? What spooky wooky Halloween films?
Well, Bill opened my throat.
Okay, well, I'll talk to Danielle, shall I? Shall I? Marek's got his mouth full of lumps.
Did I already do the Halloween episode last year? I sort of think I might have done. Because I love scary Halloween
you
films.
You do, yes. You often recommend American Werewolf in London.
It's my favourite film, so I love American Werewolf in London. A film that I did watch that I think I might have mentioned this before, but if you can get hold of it, it's called The Baby. It's on YouTube. And it's one of those really weird films. It's not so much... It's scary in the same way that Beyond the Valley of the Dolls is scary. It's like odd, and then it's just... unsettling.
That's Suspiria.
Well, Suspiria is incredible. That's what I was going to suggest, because he's never seen it.
I've still not seen it. No.
Oh, and the soundtrack's brilliant. It's such a brilliant film.
We couldn't find
it
anywhere other than iTunes.
Buy it. It's brilliant.
Such a good film.
Yeah. Well, instead, we've watched a film called Goodnight Mommy, didn't we?
Yeah, because there's been like a spate of really good horror films recently that a lot of people... have been suggesting. So, you know, obviously there's The Babadook and
It Follows.
And
Don't Breathe, people have been saying
people
is good.
Said Don't Breathe is good. There's a few others. The Shallows, I mean, I know it's about a shark, but it's still quite scary.
Is that the one you were watching the other day?
No, I was watching The Reef the other day, which is kind
it didn't
of
look
shit.
Very good.
It's not, no, it's all right.
Right.
But I find sharks frightening. So, I mean, just watching a shark, just film in a shark.
Do you classify Jaws as a horror?
Yes. Jaws is an incredible horror, and it's also structurally a brilliant screenplay.
I think it's a phenomenal writing. The introduction of him, it's done so succinctly at the start of him arriving, going into town, to Amityville, and the poster and all that stuff. Anyway, carry on. We all know about Jaws.
So, and The Thing is also another one of my favourite. I mean,
the remake, right?
The remake, yeah. And we watched The Fly 2 the other day, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
I love The Fly. Actually, no, because we watched The Fly. The Fly was on telly. Yeah. That's one of my favourite.
Oh, The Fly is amazing.
But yes, we watched Goodnight Mommy because
which we knew nothing about, did we?
What is it about?
Well, it's what country is it from?
It's German. It's Austrian, but they speak German, I think.
That's right.
It's about two twins, and their mother comes back from having cosmetic surgery
after a car accident that seems to have.
We don't know there's been a car accident at this point. When it starts.
You have the feeling something's gone wrong and the kids are adjusting.
There's something really like the, but they think their mum's acting really weird and she's quite cold with them and off, and like she does this thing where she'll only make dinner for one of them, like to punish the other one and stuff. And so there's this odd creeping sensation of. And obviously we can't really talk about it beyond that because there's like a big spoiler, so it all works to. But I guess the problem is the spoiler is for me really flagpost for about 20 minutes.
It's not their mum.
No, it was.
Or other answers.
It's a creepy film. It's very well made. Like it gets really sort of upsetting. But for me, it was that thing, and we'll all have experienced it, I think, where you, it's not only you guess, you think it's obvious.
Yeah, like really obvious.
Did I guess correctly?
No.
I'm not going to say, then...
But you're just waiting for the characters on screen to catch up. Do you know that feeling? Yeah. And it really stops you enjoying the moments that you're watching. You put your full commitment to the film on hold until the moment when they catch up to where you've got to.
Yeah.
And
I didn't think it was that good, you know.
No.
The more I think about it, going back on it, it really reminded me of, even though it's completely different, it was The Human Centipede. It looks a bit like, maybe it's just the sort of house that, have you seen The Human Centipede?
No, I don't want to watch it.
But The Human Centipede itself is quite fun.
Too many bad memories.
Yeah. Always the middle bit. Always the middle of one. The
centipede. Eating shit and doing shit.
Maybe that's the question for the listeners. But it's actually...
All of us had a moment there going, is it the worst role? Yeah, it's the worst role.
Yeah, the middle one.
Yeah.
I'm looking up now. Guten Nacht, mein Mutter.
It's not as scary as the Christmas episode of The League of Gentlemen.
No, not really. That was the best thing they did, wasn't
that's
it?
My marker of whether something's scary or not. Yeah. The film isn't even as scary as the Christmas episode of The League of Gentlemen.
But the stuff they did, some of the Inside Number 9s are really terrifying as well. They're really good at horror.
Yeah, they are good at
horror. But what's interesting, looking up on IMDb, it's one of the few films that's got a better meta score, which is 81, than a score from the general public, which is 6.7. Which
that
is very
usually
odd.
Means it's arty, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If the critics like it more than the public,
that's
usually what that means.
It's fine. It's not. I'm trying to think of what other. Because there's a
is
real.
It's slow then.
It is slow. It's a bit too long. It could do if you could really shave 15 minutes off it, and it wouldn't really. I tell you what I think. It's just it just doesn't do as well. Like the story's really obvious, and then also this just occurred to me: it's not anywhere near as scary as either Room for Romeo Brass or Dead Man's Shoes, both of which, in very different ways, because there's no character in the film that you are scared of.
It relies very heavily upon child actors as well, doesn't it? Because the mum is so aloof. And although they're sort of creepy twins, there's no real depth to the characterisation, because how can there be?
I imagine if it was a short story, it would have been quite good to read written down. But as a film, it sort of fails because no one's. I mean, what is interesting is that there's no real villain in it.
Oh,
is that a spoiler? Do you want to take that out?
No. I don't think anyone's going to watch it after this anyway.
There's no real...
You basically said it's shit.
Yeah.
There's no robots in it.
Yeah, I think it might be fine. But it's not as, I mean, it's not as good as It Follows or The Babadook.
No.
Or,
I think you're being a bit harsh on it. I thought it was good, but I mean, maybe we just happen to guess correctly rather than it is that obvious.
I literally haven't given it a moment's thought since watching it.
Well, that's a bad sign.
That's
isn't
a bad
it?
Sign for a horror film.
I have, you see.
Really?
The final scenes, yeah.
You want to fuck the mum?
No.
Did you feel scared at night time thinking about it again?
No, but I don't want any cosmetic surgery or children now. When I was well up for both before.
But prior to this film?
Yeah.
You were literally hammering your balls in the bathroom.
No! Never! No! Good night, Mummy! Have you seen something, Marek?
Yeah, but first of all, how many Davies and Danielles do you give it?
Ooh,
it's out of
10.
Five tiny ghosts.
Yeah, I think I'd give it 6.
As you're now a special guest, Danielle.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you.
Okay.
What are your top 5 horror films?
Mm.
Right, so American Werewolf in London, yes. Definitely. And also... Jaws. Dead Man's Shoes.
Mm-hmm. Presumably, the film we're going to talk about later.
Well, no, I don't think that is in my top
really?
5. Yeah, perhaps The Descent. I think The Descent
very
is
good.
A really
good
great film.
Film.
And it's one of those films you start watching, you think this is going to be really average,
yeah.
And it's incredibly. It's one of those it does take you by surprise how good it is.
Yeah, it's a really brilliant film. And
The Thing.
The Thing.
I do really love The Thing. I think I'm. I think I might go for... It's really difficult. I don't know. I like so many horror films. I do really... The Thing is brilliant. But I think maybe Halloween. Just
the
in
classic.
Terms of how
yeah.
It broke all the rules and like sort of
everyone's
set.
Copied it.
Yeah,
they?
I mean, like there's stuff in Halloween that hadn't been done before. Like the reveal in the mirror and the killing and then the villain's gone. You think he's dead and then he's gone. Like all that sort of stuff. I think Halloween is a real... Like, really broke the mould, really.
Yeah, that roaming POV camera that is just so creepy.
What's your top 5?
The Shining, The Thing. Probably American Werewolf as well. I mean, there's just some films that are just the best, aren't they? What else is... so tough.
They're not my top 5, but in my top 10. Like American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
That's in my top 10 films of all time. Jaws. Alien.
Oh, Alien, of course.
Yeah.
The Thing.
Yeah.
And... Psycho?
See, I don't mind Psycho. Like, I think Psycho's a good film, but it doesn't...
Yeah.
No, Alien, definitely. I'd forgotten Alien.
Yeah. And The Fly, like The Fly is
the
great.
The Fly is brilliant. The Fly says, what I love are the sad horror. So The Fly obviously is really heartbreaking at the end.
Mm.
And American Werewolf in London is really sad. Whereas The Thing isn't that sad.
It's so, all those films are structurally, like you said before, so sound.
Yeah.
There's not a bad, I watched the Thing with my nephew and I was so excited thinking he just turned from 18. I watched it when we were about 15, 16.
Yeah.
And all these amazing films that you are going to give you to watch and you just think this is brilliant. I watched it again with him thinking, I hope it's as good as I think it was.
Yeah.
And there was not one bad scene. Every single scene is incredible. Great.
It's such a great film. And I just thought of another one. There's Evil Dead 2, which I really love. I think there's just so many great films.
Yeah.
Horror, I mean, this is why I find horror a bit annoying now, because it's really fallen, and this is why films like Babadook have sort of changed this, or you hope they're changing it, is that horror films really rely on crick-cracking body horror and quiet, loud scares. So you're in something like they just push the volume up, because that makes everybody jump. That's not a clever trick. That's sound engineering. And I find those films really, like... Paranormal Activity films and Insidious and all that sort of stuff, I just have got absolutely zero time for.
Yeah, not the same as it was, not the same.
Not the same as it used to be, is it?
Well, it seems to be we've gone through a heyday where, as the technology's gotten better, they've had Steadicams have changed horror enormously. Yeah. The fact that they can carry a camera around a physical set. And so people, as soon as that comes along, start experimenting with what they can do with it. Yeah. And therefore you get these incredibly innovative films, you know, like Halloween and stuff. And then everyone just copies them. Because of course you do.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah. That's another one everyone copied.
I tell you why I don't find... Not that we were talking about it, but I was just thinking about zombie films. Because obviously The Walking Dead's come... I've never watched an episode of The Walking Dead. And it's because zombie films... I like them. I can enjoy a zombie film. But for me, the thing that I don't... that never attaches me to a zombie film is what I like. The reason that I love things like American Werewolf in London is the fact that the monster has got, there's a sad thing going on with the monster. It's a real, and with the fly, it's a real tragedy that that person is also a monster.
They feel like a sort of hark back to romantic gothic horror, really, in a way.
Whereas obviously zombies, once you're a zombie, like, they're brain dead. So Brain Dead's not a great film.
Oh, yes, Brain Dead. Incredible final sequence in Brain Dead. Incredible.
I like a bit of tragedy in my horror.
Yeah, and I think multi-genres.
The Descent's got some tragic moments in it.
Shall we talk... Chris Webb recommended a film.
What's that?
Well, I asked for Film Fandango on the Film Fandango Facebook for any horror recommendations. The response was incredible. Chris Webb worked with kids. And he recommended The Orphanage, and I'd seen that. I'd seen it about 5 years ago, just enough that I couldn't really remember it. It's a Spanish film.
Oh,
it's
my
good.
God. And talking about the tragic... I mean, The Orphanage is absolutely pushes those buttons of it's scary and tragic.
Is that the one produced by Guillermo del Toro? He didn't direct it.
Something to do with it, I think.
I still haven't seen that one.
But anyway, his second choice was something I had not seen before, but I remembered... from trailers when I was a teenager getting videos out from the local spa, was a British film called Paper House, which I don't know if I would class it as a, it feels a bit like a child's horror.
Like Gremlins,
yeah. Very English, like Chucky, the old TV show, or the British version of the Dare the Triffids. It's got a weird it's so British, and some of the lines in it were, the story is basically it's a girl at school in the 1980s, she's about 13-14, she becomes ill and starts fainting, and in one of her lessons she draws a picture of a house in a book with a boy in it, and this house comes to life, and then she slips into, as she becomes iller and iller, she keeps on slipping back into this alternate reality, and the things she draws on it change in the actual alternate reality. And there's some really scary, a couple of really scary moments in it.
Yeah.
But it's very peculiar, very peculiar, and totally original.
When's it from?
The
1988.
So I'll say I've seen Paper House. I haven't seen it for years and years and years, but I remember it's one of those films that really sticks in my head for the situation I saw it in, which is Channel 4 used to show these late night horror films, and I would always take them off the telly, and one of them was Paper House, and one of them was The Lair of the White Worm, which I absolutely love.
It's ridiculous.
And one of them was Hellraiser. In fact, I think the first time I saw Hellraiser was taping them off the telly in this thing. But Paper House, I don't remember any of the plot. I just remember, like, there was a young girl. Was Jimmy Nail in it or someone like that?
No, I think you could say her dad looks vaguely like Jimmy Nail, but I mean, that's really
pushing it. Who are in it?
No.
Timothy Spall, is he in it?
No.
Oh, is anybody from Our Vida Same Pair in it?
No. The only people. what is really weird.
You remember them all as one face. Our Vida Same Pair actor.
Her mum in it is played by Glenn Headley.
Yeah.
Who you would probably best
know. Another woman called Glenn.
As the woman in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, yeah.
And they decided after filming it that she should be British, so they made her read up all her lines with a British accent, which gives it this really odd.
They do the same in Lair of the White Worm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Not with her, but...
But it gives it this very odd...
That odd ADR thing.
It sounds sort of otherworldly.
Yeah.
And also makes it a bit scary, because she doesn't really sound present, because her voice is an ADR and can never be the same. So she... It's, I mean, it obviously ruins her performance, makes her performance very, very weird.
Well, because her mouth will be doing subtly different things to the sound coming out of it.
Yeah.
Because of the accent change.
Yeah, so it's, that makes it... And you think, there's something weird going on between her and her mum. It's because her mum's performance has completely done an ADR. And also there's some lines I really love when their kids, her and her friend, are putting on makeup and talking about snogging. And she says, oh, this is like a really skilled place to hide. I love the word using skill. The word skill as a cool word, which is so 1980s. Oh, he's like kissing him's like snogging a Hoover. Really good 1980s school lines in it. Yeah, it's very. I really enjoyed it.
It's slow, isn't it?
It's very slow, and it feels a bit like a Children's Film Foundation film.
Yeah.
But if you're in your sort of late 30s, I think you will give it extra points for just nostalgia, for being exactly like it was at school when you were growing up and that in the crap mid 80s. But and artistically, like the world that they travel to, her dream world, is beautiful. The house that's made out of paper is shot really beautifully and made really. It doesn't look like it's really skimping on the budget, that part of it.
Like a Duran Duran video.
Oh, exactly like it, yes.
I remember so little about it, but I know I've seen it a few times, and I know it's just weird. I can just atmospherically feel it, even if I can't remember a single person who's in it.
It feels like it could have been. It's obviously meant for, I think it was a PG or something. It felt as though they could have just, if they'd have made it really scary.
Yeah.
It could have been properly terrifying because the house is scary. The idea of her, she draws her dad in a bad mood and her dad appears as a sort of psychopath in the story.
Mm.
There's a couple of things that are really scary in that. You think if it was really going for it, this could have been a proper horror, but instead it's sort of weird kids' horror. But a fascinating jaunt back into the 1980s.
Oh, the Paper House. I've never even heard of it.
Thank you, Chris Webb, for all your... I mean, it's turning into the bloody Chris Webb show, isn't it?
We don't want to intimidate others into not writing in, really.
Yeah.
But a name conspicuously absent from our lists, which used to be sort of the top of everyone's sort of horror list, is The Exorcist. Has it aged badly?
It was never in my top horror list.
Really?
I didn't watch it until I was about in my mid-20s. And I don't understand why it's always number one. I don't understand.
The scariest bits were always cut from any broadcast of The Exorcist, I remember. There were bits when I saw it in a cinema in Peru that I'd never seen before. Like the... crawling down the stairs backwards like a spider.
Cut, that's why.
It's the best bits, aren't they? Like in terms of the scares, but for an adult, they are very silly scares. It's a very slow. It's almost like a Romero or a Sam Raimi film. Like it's an odd mix of things.
I found The Exorcist quite scary. I think it is a scary film, and it's one of those films. If I watch by myself at night, it will give me the creeps.
Yes.
The reason that it's never in my top 10 is the first half an hour is fucking boring. That's why.
Well, it's a different film.
Really,
it's
boring.
It's a film about a priest who's having a crisis of conscience.
Yeah, and all that stuff in Israel or wherever it is.
Oh, with Max von Sydow.
Give me a monster. American, not American, Werewolf in London, was in that. A Nightmare on Elm Street is also a great horror film.
Oh, yeah. Drag Me to Hell, I always mention at this point.
What are you most scared? I think the thing that scared me the most.
When you were younger?
The Omen. I think it was one of them.
The Omen is scary. I tell you what always used to really scare me, like I'd be waiting for it as a scare, is the bit in Nightmare on Elm Street where she's like at the final battle and she pulls him out of her dream and she wakes up and he's not there and then he jumps up from the side of the bed. That's always a big scare for me. And also anybody appearing in a mirror. Like, I can't look in a mirror at night. I absolutely, even now, I can't do it. And also, another thing that I can't do is I can't run a torch along the ground. I don't know how people do that. I cannot run a torch along the ground in case I see a creepy Japanese girl, specifically. But I can't, like, if I was out in the woods, I would not be able to run a torch over the ground. I think it's terrifying.
If you want to kill Danielle Ward, there are two weaknesses.
Two weaknesses there. Yeah. I thought of another film.
The Wicker Man. I taped off Ted
last
night.
Oh, The Wicker Man.
That's a good horror film.
It is a good film. And actually brings us quite nicely onto the film that you brought in to specifically discuss.
Yes.
Because it was released as a double bill with this film originally. Which is?
It is Don't Look Now.
Don't Look Now, kids.
Don't Look Now, because, and as clever people will have noticed, that this is my second Nicholas Rogue film I've talked about this year.
Are you going to talk about them all eventually?
Yeah. I mean, I've not done The Man Who Fell to Earth yet. Have we done that?
I'm trying to remember. I feel like we have talked about The Man Who Fell to Earth, yes.
The big one we haven't done is Performance, which is also...
Yes, we've not done that. But Don't Look Now. Now, Merrick, you've seen Don't Look
Now.
It was another gap in my, you know, memory. And so I saw it for the first time. I felt like I'd seen almost the entire thing from clips on other shows or parodies or whatever. So the entire opening sequence, the most of the end... a lot of the middle,
yeah.
And shots of Venice, you know, seen
very
from
iconic,
other things.
Like that, the way the beginning is shot, where the daughter drowns, like Nicholas Rogue was the first sort of cinematographer. Yeah,
can you show briefly what it's about?
Okay, it's about a man and his wife, and they have two kids. And in the opening sequence, as Danielle says, their younger daughter drowns by accident. It's just one of those things, and it's horrible and tragic, and then it cuts to several years later, and
is it only months? Yeah, it's months.
And they've moved to Venice for work because he's an architect who's he's helping restore a church in Venice, and it's a psychological drama basically, but also with a horror element that he thinks he sees a girl wearing the red coat that his daughter was wearing that day, and also they meet a elderly British couple of sisters, one of whom is blind and who believes that she has a gift, like The Shining basically, and she believes she saw the daughter sitting between them in a cafe.
Yeah.
And that's basically the setup, isn't
it?
They were trying to get on with their life after this horrific event, and this sort of brings it all up again.
What's interesting is it's a proper piece of cinema, because it's not even just the story or the plot, it's the way it's filmed. There's foreshadowing and there's like things get brought back round. He uses
images almost like collage at times,
yeah,
as well, where it jumps around in time, almost to flash up a feeling rather than something that is actually happening.
So little of it is in the script. It is a proper film that you have to see. You know, the actual... Because it's based on a Daphne du Maurier story.
Yes.
And the story's quite slight. It's about a couple who they lose their daughter, they go to Venice, and they meet this weird elderly couple of women, and one of them says that the husband has psychic abilities, and he says, no, I don't. And that's basically the plot. And it turns out that this things that he sees in the film that he thinks are happening in real time, and they're not there. It's him look. It's visions of the future
and the consequences of
and
that.
And the consequences of that. Yeah.
It's brilliant. I mean, it is fantastic. It's a really good film. It is the most commercially accessible of Rogue's films that I've seen.
Apart from The Witches.
Of course, we should have mentioned The Witches. Like the beginning of The Witches is one of the creepiest things. One memories from my childhood. The bit with the sort of short story at the beginning with the girl in the painting.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
No.
Incredible.
Absolutely.
Thing.
You know, gets under your skin. I hadn't realised that was him.
Yeah.
It's a creepy film.
It is creepy. Film.
When the women all take their skin off.
Yeah.
Ooh. No.
No. No. No.
I think the thing about Don't Look Now is, I mean, I was really lucky because I'd never heard of it. I saw it when I was 18. I'd never heard of it. But I had seen, like, I'd seen Performance, so I knew who Nick Rogue was. And I went to see it, and my friend Mel was at the time going out with this guy who was really into his music and his films, and like it was always an education going around there.
John Bon Jovi,
yeah.
Loves his music and his films.
And he put Don't Look Now, and he said, you've got to watch this film, you've got to watch this film. Now, I'm going to reveal if you don't know the end of Don't Look Now...
Stop listening,
right?
Seriously.
So
everyone knows the end of Don't Look Now.
We watched Don't Look Now, and all the way through he's going, do you see that little... She's like the red, and I was like, yeah, the red coat. And he's like, yeah, look at the person with the, yeah. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And obviously, there's lots of red imagery, like Julie Christie.
Yeah,
has
the
red
red's
boots,
really
red
high
balloons,
in the mix, so isn't it?
Like lots of red imagery in it anyway. And he's like, oh, you've got to watch it, you've got to watch it. And it gets towards the end, so when Donald
Sutherland
is running up the through Venice, and he's chasing after the little red girl that he's seen, and it gets to the like the final climax, and he puts his hand on the shoulder, and he turns around, and it's the dwarf who slashes his throat open. My friend Tim was going, "It was a fucking dwarf! It wasn't a little girl! It was a dwarf! That's why! Yeah, it's not a girl! It's a..." And he was so excited. And I'd never... But I didn't know how it ended. So it was like a real moment of, fuck me! That's a weird ending to a film.
I thought it was terrifying.
It would make it more terrifying that. Having a strange man screaming what you're watching in your ear. I mean, that would work in any film.
Mate, especially John really. Bon Jovi.
It's Gwyneth Paltrow's head! It's Gwyneth Paltrow's head in it!
So
it's
if you try to say you don't watch films with John Bon Jovi.
Oh, it's intolerable. Yeah, no, it's a very, very good film, isn't it? But it's a short story, you're right.
I watched it about a long time ago, literally about 15 years, 16 years ago, and I found it quite slow.
Well,
maybe
very slow.
Too young to appreciate the cinematography.
It is very slow, and I think that's what I found at the time. When I watched it, it was very much you're watching this film for the ending.
Yeah.
But I think going back and revisiting it, especially if you've seen other Nicholas Roeg films, and you know, the thing that he really does is he loves cutting together sex scenes with mundanity. Another thing that he does is he has, as you mentioned, the atmospheric noises are pushed high in the mix.
Yeah, the sound mix is very odd. So, like you said, with the ADR of Glenn's voice, gives her a sort of ethereal, dreamlike quality. Nicholas Roeg is using that all the time, and it's not just in the ADR of voices. The voices are often lower than ambient sound in the room, which it gives it a very odd thing where the clinking
of dishes.
Exactly. Or the footsteps or everything are very, you can't ignore them.
I remember the footsteps from the film.
And it's a very odd effect, and but it's very affecting as well.
He's a great filmmaker.
Yeah. What was that? Other one with David Bowie with vampires, was that him?
No, The Hunger.
Yeah, was that not him?
No, I think it might be Tony Scott.
Really?
I think it might be Tony Scott.
It doesn't feel like a Tony Scott
look
film.
Look it up.
I am looking.
We're looking
it up
right now. Everyone's in suspense.
Catherine Deneuve, 1983.
Yeah.
Tony Scott.
Scott film!
Blimey. It did not feel like a Tony Scott film. No, but
my favourite point as an adult is when you get to an age where you realise Tony Scott's better than Ridley Scott.
Yeah. Oh, Ridley just had a couple of goodies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Tony Scott films. Yeah, well, no, I'm glad I've seen Don't Look Now, finally. It's one of those where, if you know the end, your motivation for seeing something is diminished enormously. Because you're just like...
Especially how slow that film is.
Yeah.
Well, but you know what? It is a lot quicker than The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Yeah, The Man Who Fell to Earth's really slow.
And Bad Timing.
I think Bad Timing's a really... The thing is, these are character studies. They're never, like, action films. Like, Don't Look Now is all about grief. And The Man Who Fell to Earth is all about alienation.
Yeah.
Bad Timing is all about destructive romances. And Performance is all about the idea of who are you as a real person. So as long as you... And there's another Nicholas Roeg film that I saw. I think it might be a Gary Oldman film, and Teresa Russell's in that one. Can't remember what it's called now. That one's really weird. I can't even remember what the plot is. Something about either she thinks he might be a son or something. I can't remember. But as long as I think if you go into these films going, this is an exploration of a character trait, rather than, when's the car going to explode? Then.
Can you do the impression of... that person saying, when is the car going to explode? I'm just trying to look at that film that you were talking about.
Which one? Oh, the Gary Oldman one?
Yeah. I can't. I'm sorry, listeners. I'm afraid I can't be asked.
Oh, fair enough. Well,
I'm looking through them all now. I can't see it.
Is it got? I think it's got a number in it.
Okay.
Then, yeah.
Zero.
Isn't there one something with a number? Something number.
Well, that could be our mystery question. The mystery question that everyone wants to find.
What are you talking about?
It's really gone off the boil now.
I've no idea where you're going
Look
with any
Nicholas
of this.
Track 29.
Track 29.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, no, thank you for bringing it in. It's a properly good classic. horror film. Is it a horror? I guess it's a horror.
Yeah, it's a horror.
It's a psychological thriller, I'd say. But
someone gets their throat slashed open at the end.
Sure.
By a serial killer.
Sure, but that happens in some family comedies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Home Alone 4.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers. is there anything you'd like to plug, Danielle, we leave this place?
Two things I'd like to plug, please, David.
Okay. Aaron.
One is on Monday the 31st of October at the Angel Comedy Club at the Queenshead Road, the new one, not the old Angel Comedy Club, I'm doing my Spooky Wookie Cocktail Hour, which is me reading out spooky and slightly unsettling stories that I've written, and I've got loads of comic guests like Michael Legg and Margaret Caborn Smith and Cheeky Keita and other people like that, and they'll be doing some weird stories as well, and that'll be really good. And then on the 1st of November, which is the next day, at Hackney Picture House, there's a short film festival, and the film that I was in, called Stages, is up for best short film. There's only 5 of them, and there's an award for like best actor, which by default of being in this film I am up for.
You were going to win an Oscar.
An Oscar. You're going to win an Oscar.
I can't imagine anybody less likely to win than me. But, so you could go and see my short film. And it's being judged by the Blaine brothers, who made Nina Forever.
They did make Nina Forever.
And some other people are judging it. And then you can buy tickets and see this short film. I might go.
Well, that'd be good.
That's great.
That would be good. So the two dates of Spooky Wookie and...
So Halloween is Spooky Wookie Cocktail Hour, and then the 1st of November, Día de los Muertos.
Día de los Muertos.
Hackney Picture House are screening my short film.
Great. Well, get on down to that. Marek, anything you want to plug while we're here?
I've been making a Halloween film, which hopefully I'll get finished in time. I say this, it's been me with an afternoon in my kitchen trying to make a film, so it's really...
Is it just you?
Yeah.
Do you film it on an iPhone?
No, I filmed it on my camera and I pressed the record button and I moved around the other way and I pressed stop again.
Oh.
It's how Spielberg did all of his.
Yeah, early Spielberg. I'm going to put it on the Facebook page so you can watch a nice Halloween film.
Awesome. I look forward to that. And I am doing an improvised seance for Halloween tomorrow night in
What
Clapham.
If you get a spirit by accident, yeah. David?
I mean, that is a film, isn't it? That would be good. But it's a comedy show called Seance Fiction at the Clapham Omnibus, and that's tomorrow night, Saturday the 29th. Go to the Clapham Omnibus website and get tickets to that. But that should be a lot of fun. Well, I hope you have a good Halloween weekend. I'm sure we will.
Keep watching the films!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.